Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
For listeners who are new to the show, they may not know you as the host of the School Sucks Project.
Indeed.
School Sucks Podcast.
And yes, one of my favorite co-hosts here on Free Talk Live.
Oh, thank you. You're one of mine.
Well, the listeners really enjoyed it when you were regular on Wednesday nights for
I think
like
it was probably him that caused me to stream, call you a BAMF. And,
oh, that happened while he was in here. Yeah, that's right.
It did, but I quickly disappeared. I like sunk down. I remember being under the table like an atomic bomb drill.
Is that still the most viewed video?
No,
our,
the most viewed one is where I'm going through the checkpoint.
The checkpoint now that has surpassed
it's number
it.
Two. It's long surpassed it.
It's more relevant. So I'm glad to hear that the checkpoint video is more popular. But Brett, you've been busy doing your thing with School Sucks and moving about the state. You were living in Keene. You were on the show regularly for a while. You moved over to Manchester, and now you've headed over to Claremont, a dying town where apparently there's nothing going on.
Oh, it is dying.
That's what
there.
I've heard. It's never been there.
Oh, it's terrifying. No, I don't live in Claremont. Claremont is like a landmark. That's okay. I live in that area.
How bad is it in Claremont?
It looks pretty bad.
When you say looks, like empty storefronts, that kind of thing?
A lot of abandoned buildings. Mm-hmm. They have a nice little strip where they've got a nice movie theater. They've got a nice supermarket. There are some things going on there, but there is an alarming number of abandoned businesses and buildings and homes.
Why? Why is that? Why Claremont? Why did that happen there?
I think this is a phenomenon in the Northeast where a lot of these towns are built up around some kind of factory. We are hosting an event in Salem, Massachusetts. I don't know if you guys
have town of the witches.
Yes, it is a really fascinating town for many reasons. It was actually run by pirates throughout most of the 1800s.
Wow.
Pirates controlled the economy.
It's still true today. We're the government.
Yes, yeah. But we're bringing in a former college professor and historian and author named Thaddeus Russell, who I think I've talked about on this very show before.
I think
he's
we've
practically
had him on.
Taken over your podcast, right?
What's that?
He's practically taken over your podcast, right?
He's probably been on about 20 episodes. My audience loves him because he pushes people so far, so quickly out of
I'm
their
so
intellectual
comfort zones. I'm so glad your audience
zones.
Is ready to think. You know, they take on the mental challenge and they're ready to look at it.
That's why
His
I think
it's really thoughtful. It's like a really smart podcast. Yeah.
Well, that's one of the reasons why I love him, because I felt like the show was in a real lull in 2013 or 14 when we first started working with him. And he really rejuvenated things. You guys might remember he came to New Hampshire to give a speech at an event, and he like almost instantly became one of the most divisive figures in the liberty movement by saying that people smoking pot in the hotel where the event was being held were heroes for doing it. And this became like a real property rights kind of debate. But this only continued on my show for years. So I remember net neutrality talking about it in like 2007. And
no.
I know it's kind of a...
People weren't talking about it back
no,
then, were they?
All the way, 2007, 2008. It's been an issue for
it.
A long
really?
Time. And I remember...
Wow.
There was a lot of fear-mongering about it, but I almost completely forget what the issue is. I know it's been one of contention even inside the ideas of liberty. I guess the idea that some of these people are worried about is that these big corporations come in and they kind of choke the speed to sites like mine or sites like yours.
That's the fear, but there's, in my opinion, no real evidence that that was going on
right.
prior to the implementation of net neutrality, which happened, I think, in 2015. So now the proposal is to repeal it. And we've got Hassan on the line in New York. We talked about this situation in detail last night. So if you missed that show, you can go and grab it at freetalklive.com, grab the archive. But Hassan, you wanted to comment, so please do.
Yes. Basically, I feel that there's a small amount of misinformation in regards to the coverage of it.
Okay.
Basically... There have been multiple cases of violations of net neutrality in the past. Like, it first started in 2005. That's when they first started enforcing it. But the rules were actually in place starting in like the late 90s. Basically, what happened was between 2000 and 2004, a number of ISPs started to block VoIP services. So basically, because it competed with their phone service.
Right.
In 2014, like Verizon launched a like court case against the FCC in order to get rid of those net neutrality rules. At that time, it was basically just four rules, that everyone's had freedom to access content, freedom to run any application they want, freedom to attach devices that means they can attach anything to their network, and freedom to obtain service plan information. It was just those four rules. Verizon didn't like those rules, and they challenged it in court. And the outcome was that under Title I regulation, they didn't have the legal authority to actually enforce net neutrality rules. At that point, the public didn't really go crazy over it. Like, there wasn't like a huge uproar about it until at that point when those rules got struck down, a number of ISPs started throttling. And actually, Comcast, they were the biggest offender of this, because on the interconnects at the peering points between Comcast, Cogent, and Level 3, they started scaling back the capacity of those networks. Like, there were blog reports from Level 3 and Cogent where basically Comcast would disable some of the 10 gigabit Ethernet ports.
The protest is basically the internet version of not buying gasoline on Wednesday. It doesn't change anything.
Well, I mean, they're trying to get people to write their congressperson.
To educate the public, I suppose.
That's what the point is to get people to write their congressperson to oppose removing net neutrality. And, you know, as we were discussing last night, Mark, you weren't on last night's show, but we got into it pretty deep, you know, and there was an excellent article, actually, that Johnson brought in, written by a guy at Forbes magazine, asking if he was the only tech guy to oppose net neutrality. Because he felt like he was really alone. It was written actually back in 2014, but it's just as relevant now. Because those of us who love liberty and who are frustrated by the state's constant meddling in our lives and in business, this is a tricky issue, because the state meddling is what created the screwed up system with the limited competition that the telecommunications providers have in the first place. And now the proposed solution, this net neutrality, is more state control to supposedly level the playing field and open up the internet connections. But others are saying that net neutrality is discouraging innovation, is discouraging investments in new internet backbones and high-speed delivery methods and things like that, because, you know, for whatever reason, they don't have control over their connections. Why would they want to, you know, why would they want to put money into it?
For me, like, I'd be fine without any of the net neutrality rules if their proposed rollback by JITPI was also to get rid of the regulations that prevented ISPs from having competition also.
But he's not proposing that, is he?
What are those regulations that prevent? Because I know there used to be lots of little ISPs around. You'd get your internet usually from a little ISP.
Those were back in the dial-up days.
Yeah, and then they just sort of dwindled away, and then they were gone.
Yeah, basically in the dial-up days, since that the infrastructure was largely shared, you could basically just have your own internet provider fairly easily. But for broadband communications, they had like a number of franchise laws that were like that local governments were implementing, and that basically prevented other ISPs from encroaching in a certain area. And then on top of that, the federal government has a lot of regulations that just make it extremely expensive to actually start up an ISP. Just lots of paperwork, lots of fees to pay, and like in some articles that I've read, they said it more than doubles the cost of actually starting up an ISP.
I bet it does.
Hassan, how long have you been following this?
I largely started following it in 2014 when the court case was going on, but a lot of the public was not following it back then because there haven't been major abuses since that time. But then the main reason why it got such a large amount of support afterwards, like in like near the end of 2015 with all the protesting, was eventually the abuses of net neutrality. A lot of people started to feel it. That's why it gained so much support.
The most amusing part of the internet as a series of tubes is how many people made fun of Ted Stevens without knowing anything more about how the internet actually works than Ted Stevens does.
Yeah.
So, Hassan, I didn't know if you had anything more to share, but I wanted to give you a chance because you've been very informative. So go ahead.
Okay. That's largely it. But basically, with the whole craze about net neutrality, basically when Verizon originally struck it down in that court case in 2014, the ISPs wasted no time in abusing those rules at that point when they figured out that it couldn't be enforced.
Yeah, it seems like a catch 22 at this point, where they're trying to, I guess, compensate for how they've been regulated and handicapped, as you mentioned earlier. And the only other option that we're looking at that's probably realistic in the near term is regulation in the form of net neutrality, unless we're missing something.
Basically, it's because when those rules are struck down, all of the other protections were in place still. So the ISPs are still largely protected from like reasonable competition,
mm-hmm.
because like while there are alternatives like various wireless connections like 4G,
mm-hmm.
it's still not as good of competition, because with 4G, it's like even if you have an unlimited plan, they will basically throttle you after you go above a certain arbitrary point.
A year and a half ago, I'm in Alabama. A year and a half ago, I mentioned to you that I'd bought a helicopter, a home built.
Wow.
And I just had to drop it off at the factory because I crashed it.
Oh, so no.
So my helicopter is broke now.
Well, can I hear about the crash? Not the helicopter's broke. I want to hear about the helicopter crash, because this is like the thing, you know, what's keeping me from building my own helicopter? This right here. Please tell me about it.
Well, the engine stopped, and all through your training, you learn how to land a helicopter when the engine stops.
Right.
You build auto rotation. And I've always been nervous. You know, we practice it. But I've always been concerned about what if you actually have to auto-rotate? How good is this going to work? Well, the engine stopped on me, and I did auto-rotate into a field, and I successfully landed it, but the field was rough, and the helicopter rolled over on the side, and so it's got a lot of damage.
Oof.
But I walked away without a crash.
Yeah, I got to say that anybody who pulls off auto-rotation has nerves of steel. What's that nut that's on the top of the rotor that holds the rotor on a helicopter?
That's called the Jesus nut.
And why is it called that?
Because if it comes loose, that's all you have time to say.
All right. Yeah, so so what else is up?
All right, I was calling about Goonerment, and I've mentioned Goonerment in the past, and it's spelled Goonerment, just like it sounds, Goonerment.
Mm-hmm.
That's my term for what other people call government, and I would love to promote the idea to people. I'm sure most of your listeners are already on the page, or at least they've heard that now that we're in the 21st century and we have all the information at our fingertips, it's time to get rid of this 5,000-year-old expired idea that we need a group of people to tell us how to run our lives. Goonerment is obsolete. We don't need Goonerman anymore. We don't need goons telling us what to do with our lives. And I do support people like Ron Paul and Rand Paul. That's why I did the Ron Paul Corvette. So because those people bring us a step closer to not having a government. And people have a hard time grasping this idea of no government. Because that's all we ever have known our whole lives.
Wouldn't you say that what we that an involuntary government, or perhaps I use the term state to describe the hierarchical top-down form of government that we've had for the last 5,000 years, as you've mentioned?
I think
that people are terrified when you say government, because you know everybody's been taught their whole lives that you got to have government, and I tend to agree that we do have to have government. You're going to have government, whether or not it's a democratic republic or whatever, because people are going to govern other people's behavior.
Well, I don't agree with you on that, because you don't have to have, and I find it quite revolting to think that I should need other people to govern my behavior. Why would I need that? It's certainly not something I want. I don't want other people governing my behavior, telling me how to behave and how not to behave.
Sure, but now, if somebody comes onto my property, intent on stealing my television set or something, they're going to find their behavior governed.
Shoot them.
That's
right.
Government. Government is an organization that claims a monopoly mm-hmm. privilege on the use of violence in a given landmass. I claim the ability to use violence on my property.
Well, there's a psychological consideration that's really important here as well. And I think about this a lot as somebody who focuses on the schools versus education and self-sufficiency on my show.
Right.
The state has generation after generation going back at least – and I think the beginning of the public schools was really an intensification of this. They have built dependence into people. you know, and more people are existing in this shadow that sooner or later is going to come down. This building that, you know, the people are in the shadow of, sooner or later, it's going to come down on its own. It's not sustainable long term. All great nations and all great civilizations eventually collapse. So
under they say that failing nations
often
what is it? Failing nations collect laws like dogs do fleas. I can't remember exactly what it was. We posted it up on Free Talk Live's Facebook page
like
recently. But you know, it was essentially that when a state begins to fail, it begins to legislate more heavily.
Hey, Daily Digest listeners, if you're like me, then you really enjoy Free Talk Live and the message of liberty. Yet you may not always have the time to listen to an episode of Free Talk Live, so you listen to the digest instead. If you enjoy the digest, please donate $5 to $10 per month to patreon.com/crblake86. That's patreon.com/crblake86. You can also donate with Bitcoin or Ether. See the show notes for further details.
The term slavery was brought up, and Thomas Jefferson probably isn't the best example of someone that's, you know, took care of his slaves. But you could give Ben Franklin as a better counterexample, seeing as not only did Ben Franklin inherit slaves that he didn't want, but he instantaneously freed them. Just putting that out.
There was a political context. I'm not defending Thomas Jefferson, obviously, but there was a political context that was different, Jefferson being from Virginia and Franklin being from Pennsylvania.
Yeah, that's a pretty big difference.
And Ben Franklin was also kind of a jet setter. He liked to go to Europe and have weird satanic sex parties and stuff. So hard to manage a plantation while you're doing that.
How do 14 groundbreaking innovations in science, 14 inventions in different areas of science while going to satanic sex parties seems a little bit more harder than keeping up a plantation.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's actually a good point. I stand corrected. I mean, I think sex parties, I don't think that's like a 24/7 thing. I think they're actually better when you don't do them that way. You make it like an occasional treat. There was travel. I'm saying he had to travel for them.
If you could find scientist slaves, you could have. He could add so much more.
Wasn't that found to be false? That whole no-go zone thing. I feel like somebody called about that, and it was like total BS.
Tim Pool investigated that very claim. Tim Pool is not an anarchist, not a right winger. He's actually kind of considered left wing journalist. It's actually considered to be true. There are areas. It's not no-go into literally like police don't go in there. It's just that police generally need an escort from a second police officer in some areas of Sweden, where there's hot, like where there's these concentrated neighborhoods of Islam immigrants. It's not quote unquote the Syrian rebels or anything like that. But it is a larger problem based on this migration crisis.
And you're saying the no-go zones are in London? Is that what you said?
They're in Sweden.
Sweden. Well, I mean, according to Snopes.com, it says that...
Don't do the cat lady.
It says that one of the most persistent myths about crime in Sweden is that some areas are so dangerous to due to outlaw asylum seekers that the police can't enter them. And then they give an example in a tabloid from the UK from 2017 in February, that says, quote, "The shocking attack of bottles being thrown at police on the on-duty officers is just one of many incidents as officials have placed more than 50 areas on a no-go zone list where they admit they do not have control. Lawless thugs are wreaking havoc unchecked, and officers are often at personal risk when entering the crisis-hit areas," unquote. Again, another Snopes article, this one entitled Crime in Sweden, this one entitled Sharia Law Muslim No-Go Zones. The rumor is that several European and American cities have been designated Islamic no-go zones where Sharia law prevails, and they say that is false. They had this character, Steve Emerson, a supposed self-styled terrorism expert. He claimed that a number of Muslim no-go zones existed in areas of the U.S., England, France, and other Western countries. This was during a Fox News segment According to Emerson, Sharia law essentially overrode the laws of those countries in which said zones were located, and local police avoided interceding in the affected areas.
I don't know how Sharia law could override laws in, like, well, I'm thinking specifically the United States. So let's take Dearborn, your highest Muslim concentration in the United States. How would Sharia law override U.S. law or Michigan law in that place?
I mean, it would have to get a bunch of Muslims in charge of the law, the government, and then they would have to implement it and use force and violence to enforce it on people, just like any other law.
I don't know how they're exactly defining a quote unquote no-go zone, but there certainly exists in the states areas that are so under-policed because they're so undesirable that you could consider it a place similar to what you were describing as a no-go zone. In fact, as evidence, let me present this to you.
Well, just before you go on, you used to be a cop in Baltimore. Was that the case in Baltimore? Were there areas where your department was told you shouldn't go there?
Well, you're not told you're not supposed to go there, but let me give you an example.
So it's not policy?
No, yeah. No, it certainly couldn't be, but it's so adhered to simply out of human nature, because police, like anyone else, for the most part, prefer not to be under assault, literally and figuratively. Their entire tour or shift, as you might call it. So take, for example, Patterson Park. And there are many parks throughout Baltimore City. we used to have, and this is what I was going to give you as evidence, many police departments, you'll notice, have divisions. You'll have, like New York, for example. I don't know why they did away with it, but at one point in time, at least when I was working, they had transit police. They had housing authority police. They had the PSA, the police service area police, the police you'd see on the street, and they all went to the same police academy.
One of my thoughts here is that oftentimes when you you're saying that places are under-policed, but when you over-police an area, you'll find that the denizens of a particular area tend to become very short-tempered with the police. And is it possible to over-police at the same time?
Absolutely. I'll tell you this, I'm absolutely opposed to being a revenue generator, writing tickets, collecting revenue. I don't like ordinances. I don't like enforcing a lot of statutory law. Mm-hmm. These things make you an enemy of the public that you want to have embrace you.
Right, you want them to help
you out. You can over-police an area to the point where they hate you just for that. Yeah. And who wouldn't?
Right.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's so many areas where if the cops go and try to ask for help investigating a real crime like a murder, people won't even answer the door. They don't want to talk to the cops. They don't trust them.
Right, and so often it really does come down to the money issue. You know, all of these laws, the drug laws, I'm so sick of people talking about fighting a drug war that clearly was never legal in the first place.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.